String 27. Journey to the Greater Ark. The Ark no longer makes halos and now serves as the librarian's main repository for specimens. It is rumored that only a single halo remains, that the others have been hunted down and destroyed by the flood. This much I am told by the Isodidact as we watch our passage into slipspace. But in truth, nobody knows the present situation, communications being so very difficult. Catalog is particularly susceptible to unease during a jump, but this is a beautifully executed transit, and I feel hardly any discomfort. Nevertheless, the Isodidact is tense. The borders of Forerunner Themas are marked by large-scale galactic magnetic fields, convenient if somewhat fluid indicators. These fields show up in Audacity's displays as undulating curtains of green and purple, not unlike aurora in a planetary atmosphere. They seem as sensitive as the bells of jellyfish in the librarian's tidal sea. Though infinitely slower and far more majestic, they still seem to possess a reactive kind of life. Catalog is not immune to beauty. I have seen much beauty in the last year. The beauty of living things in the librarian's care. The courage displayed by the librarian and the Isodidact while facing insurmountable odds. We watch the changing patterns from slipspace. The displays designed to simplify hugely complex variables down to their most important components. To me, the flowing curtains of purple and green still seem beautiful. But to the Isodidact and Audacity, the changing hues and increasingly complex vortices point to looming difficulties.
The Thema boundaries have changed since my last passage, the Isodidact says.
He quickly runs through the possibilities with Audacity. Our space-time debt is building rapidly.
If we're forced to exit slipspace, we'll be stuck in the middle of a starless void, 5,000 light-years from the Ark.
The field's great waves take on a reddish color. Another wall-like curtain of color moves in from the opposite angle as if to trap and confine us. Nothing in the ship's experience can explain this. We pass slowly between, while vortices grow more and more numerous. We are in a region where the physics that used to carry forerunners between suns no longer seems to apply.
We may have to risk a crisis jump, the Isodidact says. Space-time in this region is mutating to suit precursor transits. The flood is headed for the Ark. Slipspace here will soon become incompatible with our drives.
The scale! She exclaims. Even slipspace is corrupted. Is there not a pure thing left in the galaxy? Her question cannot be answered. Our chances, in either case?
Without a crisis transit, practically none,
the Isodidact says.
With? About one chance in four. We used them very sparingly during combat engagements.
Field situation critical,
Audacity confirms. We have an extreme affine solution to the rendezvous point,
the Isodidact says.
Sufficient for our mass, but just barely.
Do we take the chance?
The librarian hardly hesitates. Of course, she says, and grips his arm. And Mantle's approach? The Isodidact prepares a command sequence for the crisis transit.
Solution is fixed. We will make just one jump, albeit a curvy one. Mantle's approach will likely follow right behind, sharing some of our curvature.
Does that put us at more risk?
Of course. I don't think he cares. Prepare for more than the usual discomfort. Our space-time debt is going to accrue with interest.
Audacity initiates the sequence. Our jump begins. It is not the worst jump I've experienced, but it comes close, and Catalog takes a good hour to recover. The others are also weakened, and Audacity does not respond to my inquiries for an alarming time. But eventually, the ship returns to full alertness, and we see that we have survived, and that we are where we want to be. We have left the galaxy, and are now approaching the protected defense perimeter of the Greater Ark, set out here in the extragalactic darkness like a gigantic spiky flower. The Ur-Didact's ship follows close, though tentatively. From 100,000 kilometers, the Ark's central forge is now dark. A single halo, Omega Halo, our Ancilla tells us, remains in parking orbit, aimed toward Path Kithona. It is a fitting name for the last of the Master Builder's great rings. Unbeknownst to most, the Lesser Arc, hidden a third of the way around the outer boundaries of the galaxy, currently maintains 6 of its own halos, intended for a more widespread economical distribution to systems within the galaxy.
Systems possessing large gas giant planets. These 6, alongside a 7th, Installation 07, will serve as a final weapon of last resort if the Greater Arc's defenses fall short. A pair of tugs, many times larger than Audacity, takes hold of our hull and mantle's approach, escorting us through layer after layer of detection and deflection shields spreading in a broad torus around the Arc, which now fills our command center's display. The Isodidact and the Librarian study the last great wheel with very different expressions. Then, the Librarian sees a swarm of lifeworker vessels, tiny by comparison, moored a few kilometers above an otherwise empty pedal, with steady illuminated streams of containers moving her specimens down to the Ark's lifeworker research station.
"Wonderful," she cries. "They've all survived."
But as we maneuver and see the giant installation edge on, there are many more Forerunner ships than we expected, most hidden behind the Ark. Many look damaged, some quite severely. Audacity, communicating with the installation's Medarch offensive bias, explains their presence. "All remaining Forerunners have been brought here," it says. "The last Themas have been overwhelmed. There will be no other ships."
The last of the Ecumen. The last remnants of Forerunner civilization all concentrated here. The implications stagger all of us.
"As well," Audacity says, "some lifeworker specimens have been moved to the Halo to make room, including human populations." The Librarian has barely accepted the first news, and now faces this. She is outraged.
"Who made that decision?"
An image is projected behind us in the command center, an additional surprise, and for these 3 a most unwelcome one. It is the Master Builder himself, a haunted and hollow shadow of his former self. Is he on probation, but allowed to appear before his old rival? I wonder whether to commiserate, "How mighty we are, the fallen," or to gloat. Neither, it turns out.
"Welcome to our Ark, Life Shaper," the Master Builder says. "Didact. Which do I address?" "Ah, the younger. It is my honor to have returned your original to the company of your wife. And if memory serves me," he said, turning to another display, "it looks as though he, too, has arrived. You both should know that I have been summoned to help prepare our Ark for the coming storm, and to transfer command."
"To whom?"
the Isodidact asks.
"To me. Builder security will carry on from here."
Obviously a deal has been struck, a desperate deal on all sides. A protracted silence in the command center. The Librarian finally says, "I will be taken as soon as possible to the Halo to tend to my specimens, alone."
"Of course,"
the Master Builder says.
"I have already made arrangements."
A possible setback in my gathering of testimony. But this is offset when, to my delight, I realize that a local, highly secure juridical network has been set up on the Ark, and that many fellow agents are here, sharing evidence, continuing investigations into the treatment of both specimens and prisoners. Into the return and elevation of the Master Builder.
Doing what juridicals do so well.
But to what end now?
I push aside all doubts. The network uses new tests to verify my identity and integrity. I then begin to quench my desperate thirst at that deep well of law and wisdom.